It is time to begin. And before we begin, I've asked Gene if he would lead us in prayer. So, Gene, if you would.
Father, we thank you so much for another day of life. Thank you for another opportunity to come together and study that word. Thank you so much for Jesus dying for our sins. Thank you for all the blessings you shower down on us from day to day. We pray that, thank you for all the teachers we have here and the good job they do in bringing the word to us. Pray that you will be with all of them this morning. Pray that you will be with all the ones that have been sick for a long period of time. Pray that you will comfort them and their families and be with all the ones with short-term illnesses. Pray that they'll recover from those and be back to normal just as quickly as possible. We ask that you go with us through this rest of the service and through the rest of today. With our prayer in Jesus' name.
Amen. Thank you, Gene. Okay, we are 2 weeks past the end of our Genesis study, but we're still in Genesis. We were going to end it last week, but since Jared, who is picking up the class for the following quarter, is out this week, we just decided, okay, let's extend this one more week. We'll do a review. And so if you remember, we didn't rush through the class last time, so we got a few questions to pick up here at the end of the last bit of Genesis, and then we're going to just do some review. And so pop quiz. My students love to have pop quizzes. I'm sure you do too. What is Jared going to be teaching on? Oh, that's out of left field.
Exodus.
Well, okay, Exodus. So, but when we think of our overall study, right, what topic would that be? Yeah, the Exodus, the wandering in the wilderness. There we go. Yeah, so looking at the time periods, that's what we'll be studying with Jared. Now, I'm going to save any of the review for Genesis until we finish these last bit of questions here at the end of Genesis. We are in Genesis chapter 48 right now. That's where we left off. We'll pick up there. We'll finish off the rest of the book of Genesis, and then we'll start the review. I've put way too many review questions, so we'll just go until we run out of time. Okay, here we have Jacob is near the end of his life, and so this is, I don't remember which question it was on your sheet, but here he goes to bless Manasseh and Ephraim, and he does something that displeases Joseph. Now let's remember, Manasseh and Ephraim are Joseph's sons, but whose sons did they become? For inheritance purposes. Jacob's son. Jacob said, I will take those. Those are my sons. The rest of your sons will be your sons. Okay, so now it's near the end of his life, and we've got a time when he's with Joseph and Manasseh and Ephraim, and he's blessing Manasseh and Ephraim. And then he's going to go into a discussion of, I don't know if I would necessarily call them all blessings, but you know, the father would make statements about the sons, and we're going to get into that. But this is right here with Manasseh and Ephraim. So what did he do here?
Followed family tradition.
He what? Followed family tradition. I like that you point that out, Philip, because it does very much remind me of what happened with him and his brother Esau. So explain.
He switches his hands and blesses the younger
or
the older.
Yeah, and so he gives the greater blessing to the younger son, and he gives the lesser blessing to the older son. Now, that displeases Joseph. He tries to move the hand. But what does he say about the younger son? What does Jacob say? It's not all bad for him. Yeah, his descendants would be great too. They just wouldn't be as great as Ephraim's. So there's what we discussed right there in Genesis chapter 48. So he blesses the younger one over the greater. And just like Philip said, here it reminds me very much of him and his brother. Now, why he did that, I'm not sure. This may be something that just God gave him the insight, kind of the providence to do. We're not told exactly why, but it is interesting to me, like Philip said, that he does the same thing and the younger gets the greater blessing. So now, in these, I labeled them blessings here, but in Genesis chapter 49, I pointed out a couple, and then, you know, if you find anything else interesting, but here when he is talking about Reuben, in fact, if I could get somebody to read Genesis 49, 3 and 4, so let's look at that. So somebody go ahead and read that.
Reuben, thou art my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the preeminence of dignity and the preeminence of power. Boiling over as water, thou shalt not have the preeminence, because thou wentest up to thy father's bed, and then defiled thou it. He went up to my couch. And yeah, the English is different.
Yeah, yeah. So what, I mean, what do you think that's referring to? This is one of the topics that we studied. I mean, just briefly, we mentioned that it happened.
He slept with Bilhah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, his father's concubine. It is interesting here, you know, that he remembers that, and maybe he doesn't know the full story, but what was one of the good things that Reuben was going to do? Never got around, got the chance to do it, but in terms, with regards to his brother Joseph. Yeah, he tried to save him. In fact, he was the one that stopped his other brothers from killing Joseph, and he also was going to go and bring Joseph back, but while he was gone, they sold him. But that's not what's remembered here. And then if I can get another reader for verses 5 through 7.
Simeon and Levi are brothers. Their swords are weapons of violence. Let me not enter their council. Let me not join their assembly. For they have killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. Cursed be their anger so fierce and their fury so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel.
Yeah, so what do you think this is referring to? We talked about this last week a little bit.
They killed Shechem for violating their sister Dinah, and by that they told, we will join with you if you're circumcised, and here the men all, shall we say, incapacitated.
Right, yeah. So here, and it says that they were deceitful in this plan from the beginning. So if you remember, we talked about that. They killed not only Shechem and his father, they killed all the men of the city, and then they plundered the city. They took everything. And they took slaves out of it. So Jacob remembers this. And so he gives them this blessing, curse, not sure exactly. Here, I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. We looked a little bit about what, you know, one of the possible ramifications of this was last week when we looked at the land. Do you remember? Where was Levi's land?
They didn't have it.
They didn't have any land. In fact, what did they have?
Cities.
And where were those cities located? Yeah, they were scattered in Israel. They were located in each of the lands of the tribes. And then while Simeon is not exactly the same as Levi there, what did we see, and I don't have the maps up this time, but what did we see about Simeon's land? Where was it located? Yeah, it was surrounded by Judah. So it wasn't that it was just like in between a few different lands and it had its own land. Simeon's land was inside of the land of Judah there. And so I think we see this right here coming to fruition in that regard.
What's the reason for his land being inside Judah like that?
Well, I mean, we're not told. I think it has something to do with this right here. So I didn't pull anything else out of these, but if you did, go ahead and we can mention those and discuss those. These were the two obvious ones. And then as I looked, some of them were, you know, we don't know a lot about the other brothers. All right, I'm not going to wait as long as I normally do for this one because we got enough that we can cover here this morning. So Jacob dies, and then what happens?
Thank you.
Lots of things. All right, let's hear them.
Well, the brothers lied, tried to make sure that they would be revenged or have revenge put on them.
Okay. Yep. So, and in fact, let's hold off on that one just a little bit because we'll roll that into the next question. But you're absolutely right. What about like immediately after Jacob dies?
They embalm him. Back home, everybody goes except the kids and the livestock.
Yeah.
He had a bigger procession, you might say, than any of the kings. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, so not only did all of the household of Israel go, minus the children and the livestock, but who else went?
All Pharaoh's servants.
Yeah, Pharaoh's servants and the elders of Pharaoh. In fact, they traveled by
chariot.
Yeah, I mean, this is a big deal that they make of this. So Joseph, you know, he weeps. The embalming took 40 days. Not that that's that you need to know that, but I found that interesting. That process took 40 days to do the embalming of Jacob. And I don't know, I'm not an Egypt historian, but, you know, here's something that I would assume was something they would do for Egyptians. And here they do it to Jacob, who was a shepherd. And what did they feel about shepherds?
Abomination.
Yeah, an abomination. So what does this speak to here that they would do this for him?
Great respect.
Great respect, yeah, because of Joseph and because of Joseph's service to God and God saving the world around them right there through Joseph. Yeah, and so then the Egyptians mourned for 70 days. So they went through a period of mourning for Jacob. And then Joseph tells Pharaoh, hey, I swore to my father that I would take him back. And so Pharaoh says, go bury your father. And I mean, I just find this amazing. All the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, all the elders of the land of Egypt, the house of Joseph and Joseph's brothers and his father's house. So they left the little ones and their herds in Goshen. I mean, this was a big procession that went up to Canaan. So chariots and horsemen, very great gathering. It was so good. The Canaanites saw it and they thought, oh, wow, this is a various grieving for the grievous mourning of the Egyptians. And then after they buried him, they came back. And he was buried. Where was he buried?
In that tomb they bought.
Yeah, in the tomb that Abraham bought, the cave of Machpelah. And so which of Jacob's wives was buried with him? This is just a bit of, it was Leah, yeah. Rachel, the one he loved, where did she end up? As well, yeah, kind of, right? I mean, they're on their way and they're going to Bethlehem and she dies in childbirth with Benjamin and they bury her on the way. And so they set up a pillar of stones to her, but Jacob is left with, Jacob is buried with Leah there in the cave. So remember, the famine when this happened had been over for about 12 years. And why didn't Jacob go back, do you think, to Canaan after the famine was over?
Too lazy to?
No, I don't think that's it. But that's not a bad thought because his life was probably very well there in Egypt, right? With his son being second over all of Egypt. But I don't think that's the reason.
I don't think it was time for God.
Yeah, when God said, don't worry, don't be afraid, go to Egypt, he told him, you're going to die in Egypt, Joseph's going to close your eyes, and you will become a great nation in Egypt. So we're talking a lot more than 12 sons and their families that are going to return. So I think he realized that this was not yet the time. So God established a place for them to multiply in Egypt. Okay. Now, Barry, this was the one that I said hold off on. How did they lie? What did they tell Joseph?
They said, hey, our dad said, don't hold anything we did against us.
Right. And I don't know. Maybe he did say that. It's not recorded that he said that. But yeah, they go to him. Why does this matter? I mean, why would they have this thought?
parents have a unifying influence.
Okay, okay. And why did they need that unifying influence? I mean, this part's easy. What had they done to Joseph? They sold him into slavery, right? Yeah. So you can imagine they're fearful. Joseph has all power now and has control of them. So yeah, as Barry said, they thought that he would hate them. So please, they sent messengers to Joseph saying, Jacob commanded you, please forgive the trespasses of your brother. We don't read about, maybe he did, but we don't read about that. And you know, Joseph wept when he heard this. We saw the progression of Joseph with his interaction with his brothers. And I think by the end, before here, we saw that, okay, he had come to the realization that this was the best. And I think he had already forgiven him. But he says, don't be afraid. You know, you meant this as evil, but God meant it for good to save many lives. And he said that he would care for them and their little ones. And he comforted them. So quite the care that Joseph is showing to his brothers.
And they did bow down before him.
Well, yeah, and in fact, that was the very first interaction between Joseph and his brothers. And immediately when they did, what did Joseph remember? Yeah, the dreams, which I think is good, so that he would recognize, oh, wait a minute, this is part of God's plan. When you see the brothers that wanted to kill you and then decided to sell you for money. And then what oath does Joseph take from the children of Israel? I think this is the last question we got, and then we're going to do a review. Yeah, what does Joseph make the children of Israel swear?
Promise to take his bones back too?
Yep, promise to take his bones back too. So here, I mean, his life really is in Egypt. He had some time in Canaan, but he knows that he serves God, and God had promised that land there in Canaan to the descendants of Abraham, the descendants of Isaac, the descendants of Jacob.
Moses took his bones back.
Yep, very good. Yeah, it calls it out. Moses is the one that took his bones back. Exodus 13:19. Moses took the bones of Joseph with him. Yeah, so Joseph knows, saying, look, God is surely going to come and visit you. When he does, take my bones from here. All right. Any final comments on the end of Genesis?
Most people don't do what their parents say. Like, we were supposed to keep a bunch of heirlooms, and we got rid of all of them, and we lost them in our moves. So, not that we don't.
You're right. That does happen. Here, you know, I think that being God's special people, I think that having that relationship and recognizing what their fathers went through, I think maybe that helps. Okay.
I don't think it's on nowadays, though.
Well, no, I don't think that, you know, some cases, it just depends on the family, I think. All right. I don't know why I have,
Why does it matter? The person's dead.
This was supposed to be Evler. This one's lesson 13 now, the review. Well, so he wants to be buried there in the land that God had given him.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, why do what your parents say? They're gone anyways.
Well, it was an oath. He made them swear. It was my word. So here at this point, if you give your word to do something, you should do it, right? Okay, now you've seen this chart. We're going through the review. All right, we're not going to cover everything in the review. So I've tried to pick out some highlights, ask some questions. I was going to put the charts, the kind of in-depth charts of Moses. Now I'm way off now. We've talked about Moses for the past 13 weeks. Of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and Joseph, that detailed chart. You can look back at the old slides for that because we're just going to talk some more high-level stuff. But you've seen this chart before. I've added down here the chapters in the book of Genesis. The majority of the book of Genesis here, chapters 12 through 50, are covering the patriarchs. The majority of the time frame doesn't have a lot written about it. That's chapters 1 through 5. And then we've got the flood here. So you, depending on how you want to classify it, you could maybe say the flood itself was 7 through 9. But we kind of just, in terms of grouping it into a time period, say 6 to 10. The flood starts in chapter 7, but we get introduced to Noah in chapter 6. And then chapter 10 is the genealogy. So, where does that fit? But when we look at that, here is the flood. And then the scattering right here in one chapter. So one time period in one chapter, not a whole lot said about it. So let's get your thoughts. You have now listened to me drone on and on and on for 13. No, we are at, we're like at 14 and a half weeks now. What have you taken from this class? This could be very disheartening for me. So the first one, what is the book of Genesis about?
Creation.
Fall of man.
Fall of man. The flood, okay.
The scattering of the people.
All right, we're doing timelines. This is good.
People.
I don't know if there's two R's. There could be. Go ahead, Rob.
Plan of redemption.
Oh, yeah, okay. There's a plan of redemption in here.
I kind of take it the woman substituting the devil. Man's life, because of the seed of the woman and seed of the dove.
Well, so that's the very first instance of the promise that there is a method of redemption coming. We don't know exactly what it is. We know that from man there will be some way that will be victorious over Satan, but we don't know what it is yet. But we see that that is mentioned. Okay. Anything else that we find in the book of Genesis?
Separation, I mean, of God's people.
The what?
The identification or separation of God's people.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, and specifically in this regard, it's God's people in... what's different about God's people that we're talking about here than we have now?
Well, the descendants of Abraham.
Yeah. Kind of like you're born into being God's people. Yeah. So, we'll just put Abraham here. And that's very shorthand notation to say that, hey, these are the descendants of Abraham. Yeah, the promises. Okay, so the promises, I mean, they relate to the fall of man, do they not? How do they relate to the fall of man?
The seed.
The seed, yeah. What is that? How does it state it?
Through your seed, all the world will be blessed.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a promise that takes care of this. Now, we still don't know the fulfillment of the promise of how that's going to come to fruition, but that addresses this problem. I mean, when you look at the course of our events here, what's the significant factor that has a huge impact on mankind? I would say the greatest impact, but this has a pretty big impact too, right? Creation. But after that, what really affects us? Sin, the fall of man, right? I mean, that introduced death into the world. And there's no way out of it until we have this promise. And then two of the other promises, they relate to
land and people
from Abraham. I don't think that they're unrelated. Right? Now, when we look at it, we say, well, I'm not inheriting the land of Canaan. I am not of Jewish descent. So how does that apply to me? Oh, I don't even have that up there, but that's a great bonus question, so we're going to do it. Go ahead, Rob.
It's our citizenship. It's where we are, you know, in the kingdom. We are citizens, so we are a called out people.
Called out people, a special people, just like the descendants of Abraham. And so we read about, I'm trying to ask this without just saying what I want you to answer. What do we find out in Hebrews about these people? Why are they written about?
People of great faith.
People of great faith, yeah. And so what is that for us?
Isn't that great faith?
Well, yeah, it's an example, is it not? Right? What do we learn? Oh, go ahead, Philip.
People of faith are children of Abraham by definition.
Explain.
We're talking about the people of God are descendants of Abraham. It's people of faith.
Okay. Because of the faith of Abraham? Is that where you're going?
Yes, especially in regards to, you know, when you talk about old law versus new law and Jesus and how that applies to Abraham.
Okay. Yeah, so Abraham, in effect, we read God gave the promises to Isaac because of the faith of Abraham. So I think because of the faith of Abraham, we see this nation. And then we see that God gives them a way to live. In fact, we can really see a connection between this. We'd have to go forward a few, but the law that's given to the people. If we read in Galatians discusses the relationship between the old law and the new and Jesus. So they're not unrelated. Go ahead, Alex.
Just to kind of bring back, I think what you were looking for was that even though that they were great faith, they did not receive the promise.
Well, yeah. So that was my next piece of I was gonna ask the question of how did Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, how did they all dwell in the land that was promised to them? Well, what manner did they live there? Did they go and build a great mansion and settle?
Tents.
Remember, I was putting up those maps, and it was just, okay, and then they went here, and then they moved here, and then they moved there, and then they moved over there, then they went to Egypt and got kicked out. Actually, that happened earlier. But you know, they were moving all around. They lived as sojourners, and Hebrews tells us why. What were they looking for?
A better home,
specifically a heavenly home. It's exactly what we are looking for. And I don't think we see that connection a lot because we focus on this land promise, but their focus was on heaven. Okay. You can point anything else out here. The account of creation through the start of a physical nation of people that God selected. That's what I gave as a one-sentence description of Genesis. There's a lot in there. I think we hit a lot of these. Creation, the fall of man, and the first indication of a plan for salvation. So immediately after the fall and the introduction of sin, we have now a plan for, we don't know the plan, but we know that there's something that's going to bring us redemption. A global catastrophic flood because of man's wickedness. Only 8 people were saved. Scattering of the people through the creation of multiple languages. I think that that's an important piece for us in the history of the world. Patricia?
The Testament uses the flood to show how important it is to be baptized.
Yeah, they're in Peter. 3 promises to Abraham, land, nation, and all mankind blessed. I highlighted that, but we see the relationship of all of that. We just discussed that. And then the life of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. This was the beginning of the physical nation, and I don't remember if it was you, Philip, or if it was one of the visitors, but pointed out, hey, he's writing to tell them the story of how they came to be, right? How that nation came to be, and we see it. And then I just highlighted some of the things here that I found of interest when we look at the stories of the patriarchs there. Well, I think the birth of Isaac is one that's of interest because of the old age and what that brought with it. How, you know, that Sarah and Abraham decided that they would do this through Hagar, and that wasn't the plan. This, I think, is a big event, the testing of Abraham. Jacob deceives Isaac and flees from Esau to Haran. I think that's another big event in the story. How he gets his wives. Joseph sold into slavery, preparing Egypt, and then coming back, or his family comes to Egypt. I think those are all highlights.
It seems like it's a case in point about what you do come back on you.
Well, for sure in this story, right? But even if it doesn't come back in this life, you know, we answer to God, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So, in our last 15 minutes, we will get through two questions. But that's okay because it's review, right? So, starting at the beginning, we spent a lot of time on this. And I think that... I think it's good to have a good background in this piece of it right here. I don't know that anyone's going to dispute with you the life of Abraham, the life of Isaac, Jacob, or Joseph. I don't think they'll dispute that, but they will dispute this with you, right? And I don't want anybody's faith to be shaken because science is very... the world is very much reliant on science. You know, I'm a scientist. There's a lot that has come from that, right? We can fly in airplanes. We can call people on our telephones. But that doesn't mean that we have historical origin science down correctly. So how long does the Bible say it took to create everything? 6 days. Very simple. Genesis 1, 31 through 2, 2. 6 days. Exodus 20, 11. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea. For in 6 days the Lord made this. In Luke, there are 6 days on which man ought to work. So this is a reference to the fourth commandment, which is a reference then to creation.
But the Big Bang Theory says it takes... took billions a year, not 6 days.
You're right. And so why, and again, this is just stuff for you to think about. Why do some Christians say, you know what, I doubt that it's a literal 6 days? Is it because they read that and say, you know what, that kind of speaks to me of being not literal?
Because it makes it with science.
Okay. What were you going to say, Dennis?
I think it's a lack of faith.
Okay. Lack of faith?
People base things on our ability.
Right.
And they cannot comprehend the fact that God can do what God says he can do.
Yeah, I think that's a piece of it, you know, and I've talked with a lot of, you know, I think the thought out there that some don't believe in the literal 6 days is that, well, God could do it, but what's really driving this is what they read from in science, right? So they believe that the world has been proven to be 4.5 billion years old, and that's the starting point. If you start there, then that's going to guide the direction, and we're going to just remember some of the issues that I run into if we go that route. And it doesn't come in from the scriptures, so there's nowhere in the scriptures that would lead us to believe. We're going to look at one verse that somebody might say, oh, this does, but go ahead, Rob.
I don't know where or when it was, but you know, in 2 Peter 3, verse 8, it says, but do not let this one fact escape your notice that with the Lord, one day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a so I think that shakes people up. I think that that's where some of us Christians would go, well, wait a minute, it's not literal, it's here we are, if God took whatever, the fact is that they'll justify it. We still do not deny that God created the heavens and the earth. But why do we have to get wrapped around one day or 1,000 years?
Yeah, so this it would be the verse that, although what without any outside influence, I don't believe this verse anybody would ever say, yeah, creation took longer. John.
Key phrase of that is the three words, with the Lord. One day is 1,000, 1,000 is a day. With the Lord, not with us.
Right. So what I would say on this is we got to keep the context of this verse here. The context is that he's going to keep his promise. Right? This is the context. I know it seems like it's been a long time for you guys. Do not lose faith. God is keeping his promise. So this is the context. It is not saying a secret decoder ring of how to interpret prophecy here or anything or accounts. Go ahead, Rosa.
It's hard for man to understand how things can be created so quickly. Down where I live, they've been working on a housing complex for almost 2 years. And you think God can do all this in 6 days?
Right. Well, you know, and I see that. Of course, I would go back to whether he created it in 6 days from nothing or he created it over 4.5 billion years for nothing. How does he do that? I mean, to me, if he could do it in 4.5 billion, he can do it in 6 days. Philip and then Alex.
In an interesting conversation yesterday with somebody, that they brought up points like the world, the universe, it appears very old. And by everything we understand about science, that tells us, well, it's X billion years old, whatever. But it doesn't consider, it's like, well, God created the world, it had an apparent age to it because doesn't appear Adam was created as an infant.
Okay, yeah.
He had some sort of apparent age to work the garden and be fruitful and multiply.
Right.
And it's one of those things, like, the Bible does not concern itself with the age. It concerns itself with the Word of God, which created the world and all that's in it, and it was very good.
Yes. Alex.
Yeah, it was basically more or less what Philip was going to say. And I know a lot of men Christians that are like, you know, I believe in the entire Bible as the way that it was written, except they have this hang up on creation and that they don't think it's a literal 6 days. People or Christians get hung up on the whole science aspect of it or the carbon dating, kind of like Philip just said, like, oh, well, according to science, this rock over here is like billions of years old. And, yeah, just really ignorant. He said, what? I wouldn't put it past God, but like, well, he could have created this rock form in a mature state, just like he did with Adam. He created Adam in a mature state, not as an infant. Even though Adam was 1 day old, he may have physically been in his 30s or something. You know what I mean? So, it's...
Good, Rod.
Yeah. I don't want to prolong this necessarily. Some of them will defend themselves and say, yeah, but the word day is taken from the Hebrew word yom. And there's not just one definition to the word yom. It can mean ages as well as it can mean day. Now, if we have time, we could talk about why that it seems more... the evidence is that it meant a morning and an evening being one day, meaning a literal 24-hour day. And I think that that's, you know, what's most reasonable in reading it to me is that we're talking about a 24-hour day. But I don't want us to think that some of these people are this far out and they don't believe the Bible at all because they doubt the creation. They would say, no, it's just the word yom is not definite. But every single good translation renders it day. I have not seen a translation that I think is worth its salt that renders it as ages or periods or unknown period of time. So I just want us to be careful that we don't just think that every single one of these people that believe that it could mean more than a day. I don't want us to think that they don't believe in the scriptures or that they're just without any faith at all.
Right. And so there's a lot of comments and a lot to comment and tag on. So what, yeah, so the what I would want to do is I want to give you, because some of the, all these items that you brought up, were, I've got slides for, and I'm just going to go through them and show you to give you why I believe what I believe. I also want to say, which is not in the slides, don't take, when you see a scientific statement, there are assumptions within that statement that you don't see. Okay, you might have remembered I did a Sunday night talk on it was the black body catastrophe, which I'm sure you don't remember. But it was, hey, because we missed one tiny little thing in science, we thought we knew it all. The whole area of quantum mechanics came about, and that's why you have computers and cell phones and all this. But it was, we thought we knew everything, and there's many assumptions that we have to make to come to these conclusions, and we don't, they don't tell you what those assumptions are, and I'd be happy to talk about some of those. The Big Bang Theory itself has some very big assumptions, and in fact I wrap this in, that you don't see, that we've never detected. 96% of all matter and energy we can't explain in this theory. We'd have no idea what it is. It's not just that it's out there and we can't see it. We don't even know what it is. So there's huge assumptions. So that, I don't want to go too far into that. But let me go through some of this just so you can see. Because you might think, well, I have this, and then you go talk to somebody, and they're going to bring up some points that, like we talked about here, and go, oh, I never thought of that. So here, the context is God's longevity, that God will keep his promise. So he is telling them, don't lose hope because you think it's been too God long. God's patiently giving all a chance. It's here, it's saying that with God waiting is like a day, 1,000 years. It's just saying God's outside of time. You're not. God's outside of time. He will keep his promise. That's the whole point of those verses. So we talked about yom. It can mean many different things. Age, day, era could mean a certain amount of time. But every time the phrase, so the evening and morning, so this is the phrase used in creation, evening and morning were the whatever day. Every time that it's used like that, it's 359 times yom is used, and each time it means ordinary day. When it's used evening and morning, 23 times. 38 times, 61 times, it all refers to ordinary day. Outside of Genesis 1, yom is used with the word night 53 times, and each time it means ordinary day or ordinary night. So never do we see it used any other way. So yes, it does have some ambiguity, but you got to look at the context and the way it's used other places, and it's always used as an ordinary day. From the book of Romans, I find this one fascinating. Here, in Romans 5:12, we find out sin entered the world, right? And because sin entered the world, death entered the world through sin. We find out in 8:20 that the creation was subjected to futility and that the creation is subject to the bondage of corruption. This is all because of sin, right? Well, if we look at then the evolutionary theory, well, let me point out one more. Genesis 3:17 through 18, ground cursed with thorns and thistles. So here's where we see thorns and thistles coming in. This is after sin. But according to the evolutionary theory, we've got hundreds of millions of years of fossil records, right? But that consists of death of billions of creatures in that. So you've got to be able to reconcile that sin is where death enters, and yet we've got the records of billions of creatures of death if that takes hundreds of millions. So you got hundreds of millions of years of death before sin, if you take that route. Thorns exist in the fossil record, so you got to reconcile that. And this would all be well before the first sin. Said that scripture says that man and animal were both originally vegetarian, 1:29 through 30. However, under the long age theory, creatures were not all vegetarian. If you remember, I showed you the fossil, and this was when we talked about the global catastrophic flood, but the fossil of something that would be claimed to be hundreds of millions of years old eating another animal. I mean, we know that through the fossils, it looks as if they were not vegetarian, but you'd have to reconcile that. And this one's a big one to me. I just don't know how you reconcile this. Evolution, right? Did all of animal kind come from evolution except man? So I don't know how you, if man comes from evolution, then we've got death in the chain of man all the way up. So I really don't know how you reconcile that to say it took 4.5 billions of years and then God created Adam. Or you have to say it took 4.5 billions of years and man evolved through the chain that we see in science. And at some point, he's no longer an animal. And at some point, he's a man. And I would say that has to happen right at Adam. Did Adam all of a sudden, was he born completely different? I can't reconcile that at all. So we are going to end there. What I would say, though, the discussion on the creation is not where you go to look for evidence of God's creation. Where you go to look... I love this chart, but it's on there. You can take a look. Fascinating. Adam was still alive when Lamech was born. That's Noah's dad. Seth was born, or still alive when Noah was born. But this is where you go to look for evidence of God's creation. Because the things that we see around, we can either try to explain through an evolutionary process. If you're looking out in the universe, then the Big Bang process, or you can explain through a global catastrophic flood. So this is where you got to go. And I will leave you with, it's just fascinating how big this is here. But I will leave you with this. They're in the old slides, they're in the new slides. If you're interested, here's some very good reading material. They're very short, and there's other interest topics down here if you're interested. Just a pocket guide to Google them. They are written, I thought they were just going to be written by somebody that, hey, I got some time on my hands. But these are all written by PhD scientists in that field, right? A couple articles are not, but most of them are. So these are people that are actively doing research in that field of study. And so just so you know, there are people who believe in creation that are doing this type of science as well. I've really enjoyed the class. I hope you guys have too. Learned a lot. And Jared will pick up here next week with the scattering, with the wandering in the wilderness. Thank you.